The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, only NFL podcast. One of the hosts goes for two twice a day, morning and afternoon, not at night. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I am joined on this fine Tuesday by my friend, host of the Dominique Foxworth Show. Dominique Foxworth, featuring no one.
Well, I mean, it's featuring Charlie, but he hasn't provided enough value to get his name in the title yet. Maybe next year.
Speaking of maybe next year, big news today.
What a segue. You hosting the shit out of this show already.
Ben Johnson. This is actually a perfect segue for us because we're here today to we're going to talk about the championship games. We've had some time to stew on them. The jocks versus nerds debate is wages on this week. We'll get to that. But I actually feel like Lions fans, this is going to be a fun listen for you because we are kicking off with what I believe is excellent news for Lions fans. Like what a soothing balm after the unbelievable disappointment of the weekend. And I was thinking, Dominique, after the Lions lost to the Niners, and we're going to talk about that and talk about both teams, as well as the other game, of course, Dan Campbell was like brutally honest, their head coach, about how hard it is to get back to that point. He was very realistic and genuine in Dan Campbell fashion, saying, I don't know, man, like, we'll see. You know, I believe we can, but it's very hard in the NFL. And I thought, well, the number one reason if they don't get back, it'll be because they're losing their brilliant offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson. Plot twist, he's going nowhere because it was reported today, Adam Schefter put out a tweet that after he had just interviewed in Washington, I believe his plane was in the air, according to Schefter, which is always a nice piece of sort of scene setting. He informed the teams that he is staying in Detroit. So what we know about this, let's see, Schefter said, I don't have the exact quote, but he wanted a lot of money, which had been hinted at before, and they didn't meet his... Schefter didn't say that, to be clear, but apparently the teams didn't meet his asking price. Nikki Jabala with the Washington Post put out a tweet saying he wanted to win a Super Bowl, which, as a Seahawks fan, screw you, Ben Johnson. I think this is fascinating, Dominique, because we're actually on year two of Ben Johnson reportedly not wanting a head coach job, because last year he was a hot candidate as well, and it was announced he wanted to return to Detroit. It's a little bit hard to diagnose because when things like this happen, everybody's kind of getting their story out. Like, it's entirely possible that maybe the teams were kind of trending in a different direction and it was a, well, I dump you before you dump me thing. Right. That's totally plausible. The money thing is interesting. I can't really get at his motivations. I mean, were you surprised to see this before we get into the football aspect of it?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised because I'm not an insider, but it felt like it was a foregone conclusion. And living in D.C., it was kind of like, oh, he'll be here soon. It was kind of the way that it had been presented. So I guess from that way, it surprised me. But given all the circumstances, it didn't surprise me. And I'm going to try to talk about this. I just talked about it on my podcast. So I'm going to try to talk about it in a slightly different way. But I think there's a lot there to discuss. And I think about head coaching and there's like three potential motivations, and it's just like any job, but the difference is most jobs don't have a championship aligned with them. But I think there's the how much you like this job, how much they're going to pay you, and the extra degree of like, can I win a championship, or how important is it to me to win a championship when you're making this decision? And you can overweight any one of those categories in order to overpower the other. So if there is an opportunity that is so special to win a championship, I imagine that Ben Johnson's price would have gone down. You know, if there's just something, some freak occurrence happens, and then the Chiefs are like, hey, Ben, come over here and take over for Andy Reid, I imagine his price would go down. And if the situation there is not a great situation, there's enough money that he's like, all right, I'll go take this job. But I don't think that they were willing to do any of that. And the final kicker that kind of hit me and thinking about this as we're talking through this is he seems to be someone who is very coveted and has a lot of leverage. And when you're in that situation, you feel like you deserve and you can get all of the things that you want. And one of the things that coaches often want that it's clear that he was not going to get is some front office power. They seem to have already settled on a GM before they hired a coach. And I think you could pay me enough to deal with that. But if you're not going to pay me enough to deal with that, yeah, I'm going to need to be able to bring my own guy in.
Yeah, that could be it. It totally, yeah, plausible. Who knows? I mean, I think what makes it confusing is even though Washington had hired a GM, Adam Peters from San Francisco, and even though Seattle has one, John Schneider, and this isn't me as a homer talking, I think you would agree, both of those jobs are pretty appealing and appealing in very different ways. In Seattle, you already have a fair amount of talent in the building. And in Washington, you get kind of a blank slate. You can put your stamp on that franchise. They have that number two overall pick, which is why it seemed to make sense for a guy like Johnson to come in, draft the quarterback he wanted in such a great draft. So, which is, you know, in contrast to last year, I think with Carolina, we were like, all right, you know, I can see why maybe a guy would be a little bit nervous about going to Carolina. Yeah. Not the case. New ownership in Washington. It's interesting. I guess the only other thing I would say that I do feel comfortable probably intuiting here, Dan Campbell's probably a great boss, right?
Yeah, like, that's the last one. Yep.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was thinking about this watching the Chiefs and Steve Spagnuolo in particular on the sideline, the fact that he stuck around there for so long, there's reasons for that. But Dan Campbell keeping the gang together cannot be overstated how valuable that is to Detroit, how significant it is for their chances to get back to this spot next year. And, you know, Campbell's an offensive guy. There's a lot of offensive coordinators who would probably chafe under that and jump at the opportunity to go somewhere else. And while we don't know exactly why Ben Johnson turned down these jobs or maybe wasn't in consideration, who the heck knows? Yeah. We do know that staying in Detroit must have at least held some appeal for him beyond just the competitiveness of the team. So yet another point for Dan the Man Campbell being one of the best coaches in the NFL.
That's the other factor that I forgot to include in anyone when they're deciding whether to take a job is how comfortable is your current situation? Yeah. That is the best leverage you could have in any negotiation is your walk away option is strong enough that you're comfortable with taking it. And I think that's why it feels like, especially since those other roles haven't been filled yet and maybe they were waiting for Mike McDonald too. But I think that's why the narrative around this feels more like Ben didn't want the jobs and less like they didn't want Ben, because why wait this long? And it seemed to all kind of come to a head around right now, but there are other coaches out there that could be available. We'll see what happens with the Ravens and Mike McDonald.
So we are doing this bit on NFL Live today. That's like, why'd they lose? What do they need to do with all the coaches, the teams, pardon me, getting knocked out of the playoffs. And I was assigned, why did they lose for Detroit? Which I just, to jump off into that sort of recapping this. I mean, and there's, you know, there's legitimate things that are wrong with this team. The secondary, there's issues that were exposed.
Pass rush
being an issue as well. But I was like, I don't know. They fumbled, had drops, and a helmet bounced off of a dude's head into the hands of a wide receiver. I think from the Detroit standpoint, obviously there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the defense. I'm going to talk about that later this week with Greg Rosenthal. But Dominique, from this game, so much fluky crap happened that, like, it's hard for me. Very different from the Ravens, where I'm like, you did this bad. I'm so disappointed with you. I don't feel that way about Detroit. Like, I feel like some of these structural issues were exposed, but I don't think there was like something glaring that they did wrong.
There's nothing glaring that they did wrong. I think that is, you could say the running the ball on third and one at the end of the game. Like, there are some things, and you could obviously, I was annoyed with them running a flea flicker and they ran two flea flickers. Like, there are small things that you can push back on. What we're not going to do is push back on the idea to go for it on fourth down, because we're football people who like to see football played, not soccer played. So that's the one thing that I think is without any question, given the opportunity when it's 50-50 to choose to kick or to play football, I'm going to choose to play football. How much they ran the ball in the second half is another pushback, but it also kind of got away from them quickly, and they're back into, because of the fumble and because of the miraculous helmet catch, they're back at a tie game in no time when it felt like they shouldn't have been. So they gave you that assignment, and it's interesting because I think the impulse when you're given that assignment is to connect the two things. It's like, what we did wrong should be connected to what we have to do to get back here in the future. But in this case, I don't think they're connected, you know, because like you mentioned, the reason why they lost this game, I thought, was because of fluky things, and we can't fix that. I don't want to change the culture. I don't want to become a field goal kicking team, even though we agree that that's not a problem. The issues with this team, they were able to mask through some good coaching, and maybe they can address those issues, but that didn't seem to be the problem in the game on Sunday.
Yeah, they got to address the pass defense in the offseason. We thought they did last year. There were injuries. You lose Mosley. You know, the things happen. CJ Gardner-Johnson's out for most of the season. So they'll have to figure that out. I think from this game, and one more thing about the Lions before we get to the San Francisco 49ers, I was really impressed by Jared Goff. And that, to me, has been kind of the story of not just the season, but in particular the postseason. He struggled a little bit under pressure in this game, although I thought the Lions offensive line did a pretty good job of keeping him clean for much of it. But I really think, and this is a pretty interesting thought as we look at guys like Tua Tagovailoa and ask, you know, what can they improve as a quarterback? Because I think there's some similarities there. I genuinely believe he is a better quarterback now than he was 2, 4, 6 years ago. And I thought that really showed up in this game, making difficult throws outside the numbers, in particular extent, like the Reynolds drop was, Goff did a fantastic job of extending and evading a rusher. And I think, again, for spinning forward to the Lions, if you had asked me a year ago, should they keep Jared Goff, I would have been like, I don't know, extension. Yeah. I feel pretty good about it after what he did in the playoffs this year.
Man, I'm so happy to be here with you. I just, like I mentioned, I just finished recording my podcast, and we had Kevin Clark and Charlie Kravitz trying to argue that they should not be, in their defense, they were arguing that they shouldn't pay Jared Goff going rate for quarterback is like hardball. I'm like, okay, I agree with you. If you can pull it off, by all means. But if you have, but if you have to pay him, pay this man. Like, you have a chance to win a championship. He's proven that. You've gotten close enough, and he was not the issue. Yes, he's not perfect. Nobody is. But this is the same argument we have all the time. If you think that you go wait around and find one of them dudes, then you are mistaken. They aren't out there. You can keep drafting them and hoping. But until then, what you need to do is draft well everywhere else, or try your best to draft well everywhere else, coach well, and pay your quarterback what he deserves. Don't start messing around with him. Don't franchise tag him, because then you lose the leverage to franchise anybody else and use that leverage to negotiate. Like, it seems so obvious to me. And people point to Daniel Jones, but they didn't sign Daniel Jones to a long-term contract. And like, I get it. Maybe you don't want to get in that situation, but that ain't what we are looking at. Like, we watched them this year. This was not Daniel Jones. This was an entirely different thing.
Yeah. I think with Jones, so much of the production was schemed up for him the prior season. And while the Lions offense is very good, Goff makes difficult throws as well. I mean, you know, I at halftime, four things went off the rails. You know, one of the most interesting kind of plot lines in this game was the battle. And I think Greg Olson actually called it like the battle between the numbers, because Jared Goff's so good throwing over the middle of the field. The Lions are so well built for that with their receivers. And then the Niners defend it so well. at a certain point, I think it was maybe at halftime I posted this, he was like 7 for 8 in the seams. And guys weren't wide open. I mean, he rips it there. So anyways, good game. I'm going to talk more about the Lions later. I think for San Francisco, the defensive struggles were exactly what we thought they would be. It was like from the first few drives, some of the struggles defending the run were like entirely predictable. Some of the missed tackles entirely predictable. I was more surprised in the first half by the struggles of the Niners offense against the Lions defense. And then I was extremely impressed by what Brock Purdy did in the second half as a creator. And I think that's the story of the game. Brock Purdy using his legs. It's been the single biggest thing that, you know, he's different from Jimmy Garoppolo in a few different ways. Which is why the whole game manager thing is so stupid. Like the accurate criticism of him has never been that he's a game manager. It's turnover worthy plays at times and, you know, whatever. He's always been good with his legs and always been mobile and always looked to throw downfield on the move. In this game, it was ultimately the difference. The fact that, you know, he was able to make some pretty impressive throws after breaking the pocket and then 3 very crucial scrambles, all against different looks. You know, I think it's the kind of thing where if you turn your back and play man coverage, he can take off. I can't remember which down it was. I think it was Jack Campbell dropped in the middle of the field to take away the in-breaking stuff, which we assume against San Francisco, and had so much depth that Purdy just took off. What it does is it limits yet another thing that defenses can do to try to take away their core concepts. So it's very important for this offense, and he's good at it, man.
Yeah, and it'll bring that underneath coverage down and make the windows bigger and easier to hit. But yeah, I think the game manager / game changer, I guess, is the way that Cam framed it. We had it as they're actually reasonable words to describe quarterbacks, but they're like tiered, which isn't fair. I think you can be a good game manager and a bad game manager. And obviously there's a continuum for that, and the same thing for like a game changer, because I think that Brock Purdy falls into that category. His style of play is that like he's going to do game changing things. Sometimes they're going to hurt you and sometimes they're going to help you. And in the course of this game was the perfect depiction of him throwing those passes at certain times where like, oh, you trying to change the game in the wrong way. And then also running and making plays going forward. And I think looking at what Patrick Mahomes did, like obviously he's the best quarterback we have in the league and one of the best we've ever seen. But what I thought he did that was really impressive and has been for much of this year and this Super Bowl run is
that's what I said at the beginning of NFL Live yesterday. I was like, Patrick Mahomes was an elite game manager. Like, this is why the labels are not necessarily. And by the way, he was incredible. It was exactly what was required of him. He was an amazing. Anyway,
it felt like the first couple drives of that game for Mahomes, he was like, all right, I'm game changer Mahomes. Okay, now we're going to see what the Ravens can do. And until the Ravens put some pressure on us, I am not going to allow this defense to make the game changing play. It's fine. We're not going to score a ton, but unless they make me do deep drop backs and throw into tight windows, I'm not going to put the ball at risk. I'm going to manage the shit out of this game.
I can't remember exactly. It was, I think in the third quarter was when Purdy climbed, broke the pocket. And then speaking of Jack Campbell, he sort of like threw like a skyhook over him. And it was an incredible catch by Juwan Jennings, who's so underrated, by the way, as a player. Right. But I was watching that and Olsen was like, well, you're not really supposed to do that. But it was what was required of him. I mean, they needed a quarterback to take some risks at that point. And it's very un-game manager-y when he does.
I was wondering in that series of plays, I was wondering what Juwan Jennings did to Brock Purdy. Cause first he threw that first hospital ball. Then he followed it 2 plays later with another hospital ball for Juwan Jennings at the goal line. And those were not managing throws. Those was changing throws out there. Risky game changer throws.
I mean, I think if there was a stat that like, well, the scrambles, the three carries for 52 yards really captures what he did this game. And then the other thing is when he was outside the pocket, he went 4 for 5 for 49 yards and a plus 10% completion percentage over expected. And that kind of captures, oh, that's the difference in this game, that he literally went into playmaking mode in a few key moments and it was enough. And, you know, he deserves all the credit in the world for doing that. We'll get to the Kansas City Chiefs and how he matches up with them and how they might approach him. And certainly some of the pressure looks he get will be very different, obviously, but all told, that was kind of it for me in this game. I mean, Bosa, you know, had some big plays. Obviously the pass rush kind of came alive as it went along. It was sort of a fascinating game, because in the end, like when I look at like the story of the game, a lot of the things that happened were predictable. Just the manner in which it all unfolded was insane. But the like comeback, if I had told you beforehand that like, oh, they won because Brock Purdy made some plays at the end with his arms and his legs, you would be like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it sounds about right. But I mean, the idea that this team could come back, that was the big knock on them, is they're not a comeback team. They've done it recently in back-to-back games. And it's a reminder that Brock Purdy is the quarterback that Kyle Shanahan needs. And we've seen this time and time again that it feels like these quarterbacks that he has that are actually like game managers don't have it in them to take the risk or do the thing that's needed that's outside of structure. And Brock Purdy's that guy. And it feels it's never been more obvious to me, at least, that Brock Purdy deserves a lot of credit that we've been, as a media, sports media complex, as a whole, been hesitant to give him because he is kind of making the difference. But yeah, it's tough when you're this type of player, because when they lose, it's going to be because Brock Purdy did some of this stuff. Like if they lose in the next round, part of it's going to be because Brock Purdy hit a couple guys in the chest with the ball. But if they have a chance to win, it's because Brock Purdy is going to scramble and do some special things. He's only in his second year. It's crazy.
That as well. Yeah. Who does he remind you of?
That's a tough one. A
little Romo.
Yeah, I think so. There's definitely like I don't know. He doesn't have the arm. Like, I feel like Romo had a better arm than him. I think that's the hard part, is players like him don't get a chance. That's why he's Mr. Irrelevant. Because like with that size and that speed, and then an arm that's like not a wow arm, it's hard for a guy like that to get a chance like this. It's hard to think of somebody who isn't who's that size and can't just really rip it.
Yeah.
I'm a football guy. I said rip it. I hate that.
I said rip it earlier when I was talking about Jared Goff. I feel like Jared Goff does rip it, though. He rips it. Yeah. Anyways, you know, I was impressed. We'll have plenty of time over the next couple of weeks to talk about the matchup with Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs. Well, and let's get to them. Let's take a quick break, come back, and talk about the Chiefs and the Ravens.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay. Let me ask you a question, because I haven't decided how I feel about this. This is a very TV-ish question.
Love it.
Do you feel, were you more impressed by Steve Spagnuolo in the Chiefs defense, or more disappointed by Lamar Jackson, Todd Monken, and the Ravens offense?
Definitely disappointed. Yeah. If it's going to be more, so like, the tough thing about whenever we ask these questions, it feels like you're very staunchly opposed to the other side when you're really just kind of picking nits. It's a hair between the two. But yeah, I think because of what we've seen this Ravens team do all year, and because they had the dynamism to like react to what defense were giving them and they didn't. So like, it's hard for me to be super impressed with what Spags did, because they didn't ask Spags to adjust. And that's what I would have liked to have seen, is they didn't at any point dismantle what he was doing and force him to go to the second page of his game plan. So, yeah, I was disappointed because the Ravens never got to the second page of their game plan. Or maybe they skipped the first page and went straight to the second page. It was like, hey, make them stop the run first, guys.
It was jarring. After last week in particular, in which we saw the Ravens offense, Monken, Lamar, come out in the second half and make such tremendous adjustments to the blitz. That ball was coming out hot. Guys were open underneath. Lamar was he threw the ball super quickly, right? And in that game, he averaged 5.8 air yards per attempt versus the blitz. It was very effective. In this game, he averaged over 10. So many low percentage balls down the sideline, go balls. It didn't. And I have to say, I think him and Monken both deserve equal parts blame. Monken for especially the pass heavy game, which didn't make sense, but also rewatching some of the plays where Lamar was blitzed, guys were actually open here and there underneath, and he was just ignoring them. And that is, you know, I am obviously very pro Lamar Jackson, but the tape is what it is. And I was mystified by his performance against the blitz and then the unwillingness to scramble against the four-man rush.
It's incredibly frustrating. And like, I was sitting in the stands amongst like fans. Right. And sometimes I forget how nuts like fans can be. And they were going nuts. And I kind of understood, because it's like, throw the ball, man. I remember last week when we both like celebrated how good their offense was. But if you remember on this show, I think with you, or maybe it's my show, either way, we talk a lot. So I mentioned that I was impressed with how they adjusted, but I also was disappointed at it taking them so long. And the defense, the Ravens defense deserve credit for holding them off until half, until Lamar could get in at halftime and say, give me some answers to the blitz. And I told you last week that it wasn't super frustrating for me because it took them that long. It was frustrating for me because they seemed caught off guard by the idea that they were going to get blitzed. And the history of Lamar Jackson, the one thing that has ever been said to be like his kryptonite is the blitz. Ever since that Dolphins game, I guess it was a couple of years ago, they were like, hey, blitz him. He doesn't have an answer for it. Why did they take long last week to have an answer for it. And Lamar seemed incredibly comfortable in the second half. And also, why did they take long this week to have an answer for it? And why was Lamar like so many times it felt like he came out looking at the wrong side? And it was like, and the Zay Flowers big touchdown that he had, like Lamar, Zay's wide open right there to your left, and he completely ignores him until he breaks the tackle, spins out, and throws a long touchdown. And so I don't get it. I don't get why every week they want to do these slow developing deep down the field routes when they know that people are going to their answer is going to be blitzed until you show
Spagnuolo.
Yeah. And not even that it's him, but yeah, also that it's him. Yeah. It's confusing.
What do you think's gonna happen? Yeah. I don't know. This is one of the more frustrating offensive performances of the year, especially again, we've just seen them win these types of games, win against like in so many different ways. And I do want to give the Chiefs defense credit. I thought the pass rush was really impressive, you know, against a very good Ravens offensive line. They were winning their one-on-one. The four-man rush was winning too. It wasn't just the blitz. Some of the blitzes were really freaky and funny. Which I'm sure factored into some of the Lamar hesitance in throwing to guys versus the blitz is like at times he was probably taken by surprise. And then rewatching them, you know, he did some interesting things to spring guys, get guys going up against the Ravens running backs. Who, by the way, get a pass protecting running back, Baltimore. Good grief.
My gosh.
They got smacked.
Just safeties just pushing them to the ground. What is going on? It was bad. And they did like roll the coverage to the quick response a couple times but they guessed right a couple times. All right, throw it away or tuck it and be Lamar Jackson.
I think this Chiefs defense is excellent. And I do think that has flown under the radar a little bit, how good, I mean, you know, we've talked about it, the Chiefs defense being good, but they were outstanding in this game. So I don't want to act like, you know, this is like the Ravens totally beat themselves. Not the case. And then, you know, the Ravens defense, like at the beginning of the game, I was disturbed, a little nervous. Cause like you said, Mahomes came out and the first two drives, it looked like it was going to be a shootout and we were going to get a repeat. And maybe that's what influenced, by the way, the Munkins play calling the rest of the game. I think it did. And the way Lamar played as well, trying to hunt for the big plays. But after that, the defense put the clamps on Kansas City. And they looked more like they have all year in terms of tackling, blowing up screens, getting pressure, slowing up the quarterback. So, you know, fantastic start to finish. It wasn't like the Browns were at the end. They got like, whoa, that was what happened to this defense? So not the case at all with Baltimore. They were very good by the end. I do want to take a moment, though, to you mentioned this at the beginning. Patrick Mahomes in this phase of his career is just so fun to like. He's so complete. You know what? I was thinking. I mean, yeah, the throw to Kelsey, that connection being what it was, being what it is now, looking like it always has is it's why they're here. But I think what struck me in this game, just thinking about the last two rounds, he's the only quarterback who either hasn't turned the ball over or thrown a ball that should have been turned over, which some of the other quarterbacks have. I was kind of joking. I went on Bo's pod about how he's kind of underrated now. And like, that's sort of a meme, but if there is something that's underrated, it's just how he sees the field better than any quarterback right now, the mental acumen, against a very tricky defense.
Yeah, there's a few things about this that I thought were special for Mahomes. And one is that he's kind of in the reverse Brady trajectory, where Brady was like managing the game and then grew into like a superstar type of player. It was a couple years ago, I guess it was last season, and it was the year before that, where we started to see him have to address the fact that he's not going to be able to hit 30, 40 yard passes every game, and he like grew. And I was thinking about this the other night, how this is like chapter two, I think, of his Last Dance documentary. And this chapter is definitely going to be about him maturing and not having to win every game because of his awesome left-handed no-look passes and incredible deep balls. And it also, to me, is about him maturing into his own type of leader, because we've always heard like the Jordan way of doing things, and he is like the antithesis of that. Whereas if Michael Jordan threw a pass to MVS that he dropped to lose a game, he would have punched him in the face, right? And he'd have been crying about, this is the only way I know how to do this, and this is how we do it. And Patrick Mahomes' response to that was, I should have thrown it shorter. And as Bo pointed out to me, he actually threw it shorter in this game. That catch that MVS had was Mahomes throwing it shorter. And his whole season, he was very frustrated, and it seemed like he was on the brink. Like, imagine this documentary with me, right? That's what this chapter is about, is how they tested his patience as a teammate, and how he's flipping out on refs and on the sidelines, but never directly going at them. And it paid off, because Patrick Mahomes learned how to lead in a loving way. It's going to be a great episode. I can't wait.
Do we think in that documentary that MVS recognizes any of that when he's being interviewed, or he's just like, yeah, he finally hit me this time?
Oh, I hate when you read the mind of football players. No, I think that he will say, I appreciated that Patrick had my back, and he knew that he could trust me despite the fact that I messed up. While they will not interview Kadarius Toney for this documentary, because he's not injured, guys. Just in case you didn't know, he's not injured.
I don't know. I really felt like this Ravens team was so complete that I was comfortable. Yeah. I wasn't picking against Patrick Mahomes. And you know what? If the Ravens had run the ball, we might be having a different conversation. So I'm not going to apologize for picking the Ravens, because they didn't do what they were supposed to. They didn't take literally. Every human on earth who talks about football in the week leading up to this game was like, Chiefs can't really stop the run. It was not some brilliant insight. And yet, the number one running team in the NFL said, nah, 8 carries, maybe less.
It's so, nah. So,
you know who's not going to do that? San Francisco 49ers. They're going to run the damn ball.
They definitely are. They're going to run it on the team, and they're going, and Patrick Mahomes is not going to only have 17 points, and he's not going to be this casual game manager. Like, it's going to require something. And that 49ers defense is extremely gettable.
They're gettable. It's a very different team from, I was looking back at some of the rosters from 2019 when these teams played last, and trying, you know, just thinking about the Chiefs side, that you don't have Tyreek Hill, but your defense is definitely better. On the Niners side, I think the defense is actually a little bit worse and vulnerable in certain ways, but the offense is better. The quarterback, I do believe, is better. And, you know, one thing that really shocked me in that game, looking back, the Chiefs played so much man coverage, and the Niners in that game averaged like 0.03 EPA per play versus the Chiefs man coverage in the 2019 Super Bowl. You know what they averaged this year versus man coverage?
What's that?
0.39, baby. Because you got a bunch of guys who are uncoverable. So it's going to be a really interesting rematch. Obviously, we have all week to get into that. Next week, we'll do a podcast earlier in the week. Then we have our live show in Las Vegas. So we'll put that on this feed as well. If you are in Las Vegas and you want tickets, go to bit.ly/MinaFox. Come by, come through. We'll be joined by our friends Kevin Clark and Bill Barnwell. And I'll be putting out stuff all week. Are you going to be in Vegas all week?
Yeah, I'll be there Tuesday. I get there Tuesday. My son's birthday is on Sunday, so I'm gonna leave on Friday. I had the tickets because he's a Ravens fan, and Patrick Mahomes ruined his birthday. He was gonna be there for the thing, but Patrick Mahomes saved me a lot of money. So Thanks, Patrick. Now I don't got to buy incredibly overpriced Super Bowl tickets. Appreciate
this
you, Pat.
Our first time we've attended the Super Bowl since definitely pre-pandemic, right? Was Houston that? Houston, no, Atlanta was.
Atlanta. Miami, were you in Miami?
Oh, yeah. Miami was the last pre. Yeah. That was when I got hit by a car. Remember that?
I forgot that you just mentioned it. You're amazing. You are amazing. So
I was walking out the street and an SUV jumped a curb and hit me.
Oh, gosh.
It really honestly cast into doubt my I'm like, you know, like, oh my God, how did Lamar Jackson not see this open guy underneath in 2.25 seconds to 2.5? Literally was walking, a car jumped and it hit me, and I was so slow reacting. I just it happened like in slow motion too.
Yes. Oh man. Well, we have always lots of good stories when we hang out, so I'm sure we'll have some new stories. If you're not too busy to hang out in Vegas, should be fun. Can't wait.
All right. Well, back later this week to hopefully announce Seahawks head coach Mike McDonald. That's going to be very funny when it's not what happens and you guys listening to this can laugh. All right. I'll be back.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.